A woman stands in her Moscow apartment, surrounded by books she once treasured. Volumes of Lenin, Gorky, Mayakovsky. Now, they're worthless, tossed into dumpsters across the city like yesterday's garbage. She rescues them at night, unable to watch her entire belief system literally thrown away. This scene captures the essence of post-Soviet Russia, a nation waking to discover that everything they sacrificed for, the communist dream, the great empire, the promise of paradise, was built on sand. Through hundreds of intimate conversations, we enter the psychological wreckage of history's largest social experiment, where 70 years of carefully constructed reality collapsed overnight, leaving millions stranded between a discredited past and an uncertain future. The Soviet system forged a distinct species, Homo Sovieticus. They shared identical vocabulary, heroes, and collective trauma from gulags and terror. Their relationship with death was unique. Neighbors vanished overnight, entire families erased. For Stalin survivors, freedom meant simply not being afraid, crystallized in those three miraculous August 1991 days when citizens defeated the hardline coup. The Soviet kitchen became resistance culture's heart. These cramped 9-square-meter spaces transcended their size. Dining rooms, philosophy salons, and therapy centers combined. While 19th-century Russian culture flourished on aristocratic estates, 20th-century culture found sanctuary here. Families huddled around radios, straining to hear BBC through government jamming. Over endless tea and vodka, they debated politics, philosophy, and universal happiness. Most were kitchen dissidents, masters of duality who perfected leading double lives. Yet fundamental contradictions shaped the nation. Russians remained eternal dreamers, believing in magical intervention over sustained effort. Beloved folklore heroes, Ivanushka the Fool and Amelia, epitomized this preference for good fortune without labor. Despite deep-rooted belief in Russian exceptionalism, their primary claim to greatness rested on vast natural resources rather than human achievement. They remained a nation of Oblomovs, dreamers awaiting miraculous transformation. The Gorbachev era began with radiant faces and freedom in the air. People devoured newspapers, rushed to rallies, and learned forbidden truths about Stalin and the Gulag. Most simply wanted better lives with blue jeans, VCRs, and cars. When tanks appeared during the August 1991 putsch, young people rushed to defend the White House. Tens of thousands gathered chanting Yeltsin, while old ladies fed hard-boiled eggs to frightened soldiers. Older citizens demanded to join. The communists stole my life from me. Let me at least have a beautiful death. 3 days later, victory celebrations erupted with kissing and jubilation. The period marked unprecedented political awakening. People walked their dogs with transistor radios pressed to their ears. Families abandoned dinner to watch live Congress speeches. They admired Anatoly Sobchak's European style, drew inspiration from Andrei Sakharov's principled stance, and took pride in Raisa Gorbacheva's elegance, the first time we'd ever seen the wife of a general secretary we didn't have to be embarrassed of. For a brief moment, anything seemed possible. After the Soviet collapse, Russian society froze in uncertainty. Banks, billboards, and colorful consumer goods replaced gray Soviet products that looked as if they had been manufactured in wartime. Libraries and theaters emptied while markets flourished. Money became synonymous with freedom. The intelligentsia sold their prized book collections, not from poverty, but disillusionment. Russian novels don't teach you how to become successful, how to get rich. Oblomov lies on his couch. Chekhov's protagonists drink tea and complain about their lives. Instead of discussing Pasternak, people remodeled dachas, bought furniture, learned to dress fashionably. Murder became commonplace. People found bodies in courtyards and stopped being shocked. One man explained why Stalin was never tried. In order to condemn Stalin, you'd have to condemn your friends and relatives along with him. He later discovered his father had been informed on by their neighbor and beautiful Aunt Olga. When confronted, she recalled 1937 as the happiest year of my life. I was in love. Her verdict? Show me an honest person who survived Stalin's time. The Soviet collapse's human toll manifests in countless personal tragedies. Marina's experiences epitomize the harsh realities, felling massive timber in freezing conditions, dragging 100-pound railway ties at remote Siberian sites, traveling like cattle in unheated freight cars while singing mandatory Komsomol songs celebrating their supposed voluntary sacrifice. Life in the taiga tested human endurance brutally. Workers suffered debilitating scurvy and lice infestations while fulfilling impossible quotas on bland kasha, occasionally supplemented with bear meat. Marina nearly faced imprisonment for oversleeping at the brick factory, where women manually processed thousands of heavy bricks per shift, hands cracking and bleeding. After Stalin's death in 1953, she noticed people started smiling again. Before that, they lived carefully. Now, she feels betrayed. Everything burned down to the ground, our whole life. Dr. Margarita captures the complex Soviet psychology. We were poor, but never knew it, she explains, describing their make-do existence with frozen boots and cheap pencil cases. Yet they maintained almost religious faith in the promised communist paradise. Today's mockery stings. People dismissively call her generation Sovok, Soviet trash, simple-minded dupes. Yuri Gagarin's spaceflight captured both achievement and genuine pride, as strangers spontaneously embraced in streets, crying, "We're the first," with tears of joy. At beer stands across Russia, people philosophize about their nation's fate. A drinking man admits he drinks to transport myself to another place where everything is good and beautiful. The fundamental question emerges: where do I want to live? In a great country or a normal one? Many express nostalgia for empire, finding post-Soviet life boring. Under socialism, the people were participating in history. Others reject this romanticism. One wants to live in a small country like Denmark, no nuclear weapons, no oil, no gas. Another remembers Soviet reality. We used to live in a great country where we stood in line for toilet paper. Russians' relationship with suffering emerges as central. We're always talking about suffering. That's our path to wisdom. A teacher notes Western attitudes seem naive to us because they don't suffer like we do. Her students laugh. We don't want to suffer. An ordinary woman reflects on what she's lost. I've always lived in the same little house. All I had to eat was macaroni and potatoes, and that's all I eat today. Political changes mean nothing to her, whether it's socialism or capitalism. The important thing is to make it to spring. Plant potatoes. For millions, grand historical narratives remain distant thunder, while daily survival demands full attention. What emerges isn't simple triumph or tragedy, but human beings trying to make sense of their shattered world. The Soviet collapse was a psychological catastrophe that severed people from their entire framework of meaning. Some cling to nostalgia for empire, others embrace normal life. Some mourn wasted sacrifices, others celebrate freedom from grand purpose. The genius of this oral history lies in its refusal to impose a single narrative. Instead, it creates a polyphonic chorus, capturing the complexity of living through one world's death and another's uncertain birth. These are raw confessions from people wrestling with profound questions. Was everything we believed a lie? Were our sacrifices meaningless? In our own time of political upheaval and collapsing certainties, these voices offer something invaluable, a reminder that when entire systems collapse, what remains is our shared humanity, our capacity for both cruelty and kindness, our eternal struggle to find meaning amid chaos. The Soviet experiment may have failed, but its questions about sacrifice, community, freedom, and what makes life worth living remain urgently relevant.